Welcome to the Better People Podcast. I'm Holly DePalma, one of your hosts, and I'm joined today by Juliette Dupre, who is VP of People at Simul Media. Welcome, Juliette.
Thank you. So nice to be here.
Yeah, I appreciate you joining the taking the opportunity and taking the time to talk with us. I'm looking forward to hearing about your experiences and what brought you to HR. You have a super interesting background. You're a ballerina.
Yeah, I'm a former ballerina. I still take some classes now and then, but yeah, that is part of my career history technically. I guess it depends on how far back you want to go, but I'll just start from end of college. I had already started my professional career while I was in college. I did work full-time while I was in school full-time for undergrad. And in 2004 is when I joined McGlinchey Stafford Law Firm, which I think goes by another name and has different managing partners nowadays, down in New Orleans, where I went to school at Tulane and was a litigation paralegal dealing in originally just product liability law for major auto manufacturers, which was fascinating work. I worked for a wonderful, wonderful partner there, Gary Hebert, who really taught me a lot about the pursuit of perfection, which I've carried with me through all of my work. He was a tough cookie, and but that high bar for our clients is something that like absolutely served me through the rest of my career, and I think it's been a major support to the work that I do now. I started helping the labor section with arbitrations for large retailers, just random, harassment suits or what have you. So I started getting exposed to labor law for initially through the litigation lens, which is an interesting way to be introduced to it. At some point, as some of you may recall, the major auto manufacturers, which were the bulk of the client work at the time, were going through some bankruptcies at some point in the 2008 timeframe.
Oh, a lot of people were going through challenges. Gosh,
that was a wild time. And I'm so grateful that my career didn't have any interruptions during it, because it was another one of these moments where, all the college grads were terrified that they weren't getting jobs. And the auto manufacturers went through some reorgs. And so the firm said, well, we really want to keep you, but we don't need as much of that work. Also, we think you'd be great as a recruiting director for our attorneys and our summer clerk program. So that was really what I consider to be the moment that I sort of moved into HR. And won't surprise anyone to know, like, the law firm world still struggles with a lot of issues around like progressive hiring and things like that. So I was the recruiting director there for something like 3 years. And worked very closely with the managing partners and the recruiting attorney and some good people there, and ran the summer clerk program, but very focused on the recruiting side. And I loved it, and I realized that I loved the work, but I didn't feel a love for the industry of law anymore, or for, and I kind of was interested in, I'd always been interested in technology. I'd wanted to get a software engineering degree, but my university, Tulane, closed that program as soon as I enrolled in undergrad. I know. Years later, to come full circle on that, just as a funny aside, years later, they would have me as a consultant as they decided to, like an industry advisor rather, as they decided to reboot that program once I was on the other side of the fence, which was hilarious. Anyway, I'd already always been interested in tech, and the Economic Development Commission for Louisiana was working towards getting tech companies and video game companies into the state. And I ended up becoming the lead recruiter for a studio from Gameloft that was coming into New Orleans. Gameloft, a lot of people are more familiar with their sibling company, Ubisoft, run by the Guillemots out of Paris. French game company, very well known for Assassin's Creed and some other IPs. So
I'm so embarrassed. And no. I said before, like, I feel like our producer Ben should be interviewing you, because I I don't know anything about games, but I'm like loving the conversation, but keep going. So keep going.
And I love that, like, you do play, you know, mobile games, which is most of where I spent my career. Gameloft is the mobile game side of the business. And I think I was actually playing one of their Assassin's Creed mobile games back in the day when I joined the group there, and eventually over the years made my way to their New York office. And that's where my career kind of developed a little bit further. I did some other things, worked for a tech startup outside of the game space called Plated. That was sort of like a Blue Apron HelloFresh competitor.
Oh yeah. And they were on Shark Tank.
That's right. They were on Shark Tank and run by two amazing, amazing human beings, Nick Taranto and Josh Hicks. Great, great people, just like to their core, just good human beings. That was really a pleasure. Met my mentor there, that then SVP of people, Patrick Burlingham, who really was, you know, we can talk a little bit about mentorship if that's interesting to the audience too. Like, that was really lovely. It's been lovely to have him throughout my career from there. After that, joined another sort of startup in the mobile games industry, Tilting Point, worked with some wonderful folks there. A lot of us from the Gameloft studios, and sort of had been pulled into that from some of the executives that were originally in my prior role, and became the head of people for them. And then found my way to esports, which was a totally wild experience. Really, really interesting being part of a sports team. And then did a little bit of time, as I'll call it, at TikTok, which was very interesting. And then found my way to Sightwell Media, where I am today. And I do love this group. It's an exceptional group of people, for sure. So
yeah, that's quite a journey. And, you know, the startup world and people it's a really interesting, you know, you have very different people challenges than established sort of growth oriented environments. So talk to me about what the role is like as a head of chief people officer at a startup where you're, you know, you can't do the work without the people.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, it's complicated. I mean, just to take my own team as an example, every manager, including myself, is generally going to be a player coach in a startup. You don't really have the luxury of having managers who just manage, and that's all they do is manage the workflow. And you end up with a scope of control, interesting scope of control matters when it comes to how many direct reports are really reasonable for folks. You end up with title inflation issues as startups start very young and give people, you know, really advanced titles because they can't necessarily pay the same comp. And then someone like me comes in and we have to kind of gently, very carefully start to adjust and move in a direction of a little bit more reasonableness with those things. You have resource restrictions in terms of budget, in terms of what you can do, certainly more so than in enterprise organizations. I think there's a perception that resources are strapped in some larger orgs where if you come to the startup world, you really experience what it means to be pressed to maximize value of every single dollar that you spend and be really creative and make very, you know, very thoughtful decisions about what is the priority, what is most important for our resources, be they money or people, et cetera. And a lot of change. You know, change management is sort of my passion area, and it is one of the most difficult, interesting pieces to me about business generally. And startups are places where really you see that constant evolution, or you don't succeed. I think it's, you know, to put sort of my own personal opinion about business out there, I think, you know, we're definitely in a period where shorter life cycles of businesses, product ideas, everything are the really the call of the day, for better or worse. It's pretty well documented by various business publications. And so that instigates, especially in the startup world where we're following these trends and we're trying to get on top of them and be ahead of them, that instigates a lot of other constant change, like turnover, like, you know, people wanting their careers, you know, constantly, what's the next thing? It's very interesting and different from an organization that's larger that's more legacy and that is more geared towards careers that are really long term at one place. And to my own career is a great point. I started in a law firm. I was there for 7 years, and most of my roles since then have been around the 2 to 3 year mark. Some even shorter than that. And that has a lot to do with the organizations in the startup world evolve so quickly that the organization that you join and the one that you create are very different. And I think there is something to the old adage when change management of the agent of change doesn't survive the change. I think I would put a different spin on that because it's not really about not surviving. It's more about recognizing when the skills that you bring are needed elsewhere, more than at your organization that you entered. But yeah, that's startup life in a very quick nutshell.
Yeah. You talked about a couple things that I want to hit upon. And you talked about, first of all, you framed your the beginning of your career working in a law firm as you learned the pursuit of perfection.
Mm-hmm.
And follow me here. I hope I can articulate this well. But oftentimes in a startup environment, in the rapid change, quick.
Yes.
You go with the 85% is good enough,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so balance for me, tell me how you balance that pursuit of perfection, which has sort of been your mantra, I'm going to call it your mantra, with the kind of sort of environment that you're in that doesn't really allow for perfection in many ways because it moves so quickly.
And that's, I'm just going to stop and say that's one of the things I love about this podcast after having listened to so many is that you have such a great innate or maybe learned, I'm not sure, ability to catch these things and like put two and two together and get to deeper layers of these things. It's totally true. I think that another lesson that I learned, and I need to give credit where credit is due, I'm sure others have said this before, but the person who really I really picked this up from and learned to practice it with was my general counsel at Tilting Point, Shirin Malkani. She was an amazing colleague and leader to work with. And in the games industry, the only female executive leader I've ever worked with, like to be truly in the games development world. Shirin, who I think also ended up going into ad tech after Tilting Point, she used to always say perfection is the enemy of good. And I think there is a tension there because I do believe in both things. I believe in the pursuit of perfection, but I also believe in recognizing that actual perfection is the enemy of good. You cannot move a fast moving business forward if you only hold to that standard. It's more nuanced than that. And I'm sure my team members might have their moments when they, I remember when I was working to bring it back to your original point with Gary, there were days when I felt like, how can the standard be that high for the time we have, this, that, the other? And learning that, I think what I learned with him and what I try and teach my team is that you are capable of a lot higher quality bar than maybe you realize, even with the restrictions. But yes, perfection, to your point, is not necessarily the actual expectation or goal. It's not really possible for any of us. But how close can you reasonably get, and in service of the teams that we're supporting and recognizing all the effort that they're putting in and making sure that we're really representing what they're doing and being an example to others and so forth. I mean, I think that's really what's at the heart of it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I like what you said about one of the things you do with your team is really help them achieve something and achieve more than they really had anticipated. And I think that's the mark of of an exceptional leader and people manager. I say all the time, my co-host and I, Margaret and I, do a lot of leadership development work. And I say all the time, like managing people is the hardest thing to do. Like I'm horrible at it. And I stepped away from it. Maybe it was taken away from me, but you know, in the startup world and in a lot of, not just startup world, but you know, I see it all the time, the player coach role. And when you're in a rapid change, a rapid developing environment, and you're a player coach, and the formal learning for management and leadership might not have been priority.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me the role that you play in helping sort of coach up new leaders and managers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's another balancing act for sure. It's always sort of a change intervention in and of itself. When someone like me is brought into a startup, it generally means they've reached another phase of their growth and development as a business. They're looking to sort of professionalize a bit more. So there's an element of change intervention going on anytime I enter a space. And usually the first thing that happens is, as will happen with many folks in such a position, you spend a lot of time talking to people and listening, a lot of listening and understanding where people are and what they're going through and how things are going, and trying to diagnose the barriers and the root cause of those barriers. So when I usually enter a space as, you know, a business, is when I kind of start taking stock of where the various managers are in their journey of learning to better themselves and to get the most out of their people and to be good people as managers. And you generally find there's some that have more, you know, natural skill than others, but I'm a big believer in management as something you can learn, and leadership is something you can learn. And I think, you know, there's a lot of research out there to show that, sure, anyone can have talents for anything naturally, but ultimately these are skills that can be taught, and leaders are not born. That is one of the most, I think, harmful ideas and erroneous aphorisms of business. So with that in mind, it's really a little bit of a custom approach once I get to know folks. And typically I'm dealing with organizations where I might have, you know, a dozen top executive leaders and maybe, you know, two or three dozen managers all in underneath them. So it's not a situation where I can't personally get to know them all. And that's not necessarily feasible in larger organizations, but right, knowing that I can, you know, that's something that obviously I spend time doing, and that it can be a very custom approach from there. Is it confidence? Is it, you know, is it their coaching ability? And, you know, obviously there are lots of resources for any specific skill that they need to brush up on. Sometimes it's just talking through with them what kind of manager they want to be, and, you know, letting them sort of vent or share or come to their own conclusions on their own through talking with me about what the right thing to do is and how their approach needs to change. Sometimes it's getting other managers to give them, you know, candid feedback. And I'm a big believer in radical candor. I've rolled out training on not just radical candor specifically, but feedback in general for managers and for staff here at Simul Media, trying to make sure that folks feel like they have those, they're starting to build those muscles, I would say. But for any given, you know, skill or element that I believe a manager would benefit from building, it really is a building thing. And that's something that I try and emphasize to the leaders as well, who sort of are like, oh, you're here. Okay. So like, can you just fix everybody and fix all the problems that we have? And that's a lot of times the conversation, right? And I use the word problem very deliberately because that's how it's often couched. It's really about building a muscle. It does not happen overnight. You know, nothing happens overnight. It's a matter of practice. Practicing just like anything else, just like practicing chess or practicing ballet or practicing to get good at Dota 2, right? It's like, which is a game.
I was going to say, is that a game?
Which is a game that requires enormous skill and speed and all these things. It's, if you practice it, you get better at it. If you practice feedback, if you practice, you know, good coaching question styles, you will get stronger at it. So that's kind of usually the thing. But the balancing act to all this, and I feel like I'm not rambling, but giving you a very long answer. The balancing act is that I also tell my team members, you can't make anybody do anything. I'm not here to make any manager do a thing or make any manager try a different style or make any manager, you know, ultimately I do live by, for better or worse, the idea that folks will make their bed and they will have to live in it. And if you're a manager that I'm working with, or, you know, a team member I'm working with who is just not open to change and you don't have any change readiness and you're not, which is not something I see very often, but it does
happen. I wouldn't think so. Yeah.
It does happen. You know, I will on occasion let them proceed with their plan and see where it goes and then come back in and say, okay, so this is action. This is consequence. Like, now, how do you feel about that choice? You know, does it still feel like it was the right path?
Right.
Because sometimes, and this, I'll be totally honest with you, it most often happens at the highest executive level because of that fallacy of what got you here. They think we'll get them to the next level. And we know the famous phrase on that, which I do believe in. So yeah, there's a little bit of like maybe hubris you know, I'm not going to necessarily be able to break through that easily. And some folks I find I need to let them stumble. And then I try to be there to pick them back up and say, okay.
Well, you know, you talk about, you know, you're talking about feedback. Mm-hmm. And there's so much talk about feedback in this, the world of business and management and leadership. And it's good, it's bad, it's this, it's that.
Feed forward now. Everyone's talking about feed forward.
Yeah. Which I'm not even going to say. I'm not even going to say. Like, that's embarrassing. But,
you get it.
What's that?
You get it.
I worked at a place for a little while. Yeah. It was, you know, it was one of those places that was a horrible culture fit for me. Mm. and it's painful, right? Those environments are, it is gut, like every day you're like, oh my God.
You're just a bundle of cortisol and unhappy hormones and stress.
Oh, awful. Yeah. And they had a value that was, straight talk, which meant that you said the interaction was straight talk, Juliet.
Good boy.
Which meant I can say anything I want to
you. Yeah. Common misperception of feedback. Yeah.
I'm like I'm going to share it. So I said it was a bad fit. I did a great job because I do a good job where I, you know, that.
No, you do.
You do a good job. And at the end of a cycle, we were absent a leader in our group and I really wanted to work for this organization. It was just like they were doing good in the world and really wanted to work there. And I was like, the culture was beginning to change, but there was some, anyway, I suggested that I could lead the group. And my boss said, straight talk? And I said, sure. And he said, I'll see you as a leader.
Oh,
it's like, oh my God, I rather than, you know, talking to me about, it was,
wow.
And it gets better. So I went home and I was like, and I said, okay, I said, give me a little time, but I'll find a new job.
Mm-hmm.
And, the next day, he called me because it was all open office. So he called me into a conference room and I'm really short and he was very big. So again, it was very intimidating. And I was like, yes. Like, did you change your mind? Because I'm not changing my mind, right? Like, and he's like, so yesterday's conversation was a little awkward. And I was like, it actually wasn't. Like, that's okay. Like I said, just give me a little time. He goes, I just want to make sure that you understood. I don't see you as a leader here. And I said, listen, you were really clear yesterday. Today's just patronizing. So I'm going to go. Like it was that was the culture of feedback.
That is so patronizing.
That's not even feedback.
You know, and well, since we have this lovely platform today, I will just say for anyone who's not familiar, a lot of people like to use the phrase radical candor when they have they've never trained on it. They have no idea what it means. And it means to challenge directly, yes, but to care personally as well. And if you don't care personally, you have no idea what radical candor really is. And I've had people in conversations with other executives and leaders tell me, and I wonder if this resonates with you, oh yeah, don't Steve Jobs and Elon Musk, they practice radical candor all the time. And I say, no, they practice obnoxious aggression, which is on the four box for that meeting. That's one of the first things you learn is that caring personally about the other person and their development and their growth and their future, the way you would a friend, a colleague, a family member, the way you should. That's what it's really about. And so that's for anyone who's like listening to this, it doesn't have
right. The context. Like
But you're not practicing. That's not radical candor.
Right. And you know, in addition to hosting a podcast, I listen to far too many and I annoy most people with I heard on a podcast and really I listen to nerdy ones. I listen to goofy, whatever.
Nice.
But one of my favorite podcasts, is the Jocko podcast, and it's Jocko Willink. And he is a former Navy SEAL officer. And he wrote a book, Extreme Ownership, and he does a lot of leadership coaching. And they talk in the military about, and I find military leadership fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. I have never served. No one in my family is really like,
oh, wow.
So I'm not. From like so a military background,
world
but the leadership style is they say, you have to love your team. It's not enough to care deeply. You have to love your team because you're going to be potentially in situations where it's life or death.
Life or death.
Mm-hmm. And taking that around caring about the people you work with, it's a complete game changer.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting to me. It's so funny because people are very familiar with the command and control management style. If you're listening to this podcast, you're probably familiar with the management science history and all that stuff. And people don't necessarily associate that with it. But I have had members of the military in my family, and I'm aware of that. And I think you're completely right that for all of the misalignment that military style has to corporate world, there's also some pieces we could stand to learn from it. And that's absolutely one of them. And yeah, I mean, when you think about, you know, giving feedback to someone the way you would a friend, it's completely different.
Right. Yeah.
Let alone thinking about them like family or someone that you really deeply love and care about. Wanting them to succeed makes all the difference in the world. So again, huge fan of actual radical candor versus obnoxious aggression or some of these other categories that people love to use. I also think there's a lot more to feedback than just that, you know, that concept. There's a lot of other pieces of the puzzle that are worth, you know, helping managers to understand as a bigger part of all of it, such as the psychological and biological things that happen when someone feels threatened or someone's in a feedback situation, and you know, the timing of that, the you know, what's happening in the brain, what's happening in the body, the hormones that are released, the time that that takes, you know, what that can mean to people, how you, that might change your approach. There's so much there that is worth learning. I think if you're a manager, you will end up in a situation where you need to have, you know, be giving feedback all the time, positive and negative and everything in between. And I, some people don't like to say negative, but I just want to be honest. I think sometimes
you have You're right. People say all feedback's positive. It's a gift. But, you know, sometimes you're trying to correct something that needs to be corrected. And it's...
And that is a gift, sure, but it's still negative feedback.
I'm still telling you that you need to change the way you're doing something.
Exactly. And that's hard for people to hear. And I think recognizing that most people, you know, if you have done even a halfway decent job of hiring, most people you've hired want to do a good job. So it's a personal defeat, and it's really upsetting on a personal level to someone when they realize that they haven't been, you know, as awesome as they had hoped to be, you know,
like, as they're trying to be,
genuinely trying to be. A lot of people, you know, genuinely, but it also, it's tough. So many layers to that, but yeah, that's a big part.
And I think that this dovetails really well into the conversation around mentorship, and you spoke about your mentor, and certainly a role of a mentor is to help shape and give feedback and all those kinds of things. So talk to me about, you know, your mentor and what this has meant.
So I got extremely lucky with Patrick Burlingham when I joined Plated, because he was a trained executive coach. And he is not only a trained executive coach, he actually trains other executive coaches to be executive coaches. And he has a number of frameworks and tools at his disposal. And I would argue probably some natural gift for communication and thinking in those ways as well. Every time I'm in a room with him or have a conversation with him, I just feel like I learn so much, and I learn so much about myself. And it was really a pleasure to work under him and to learn from him. And after, we both ended up leaving Plated pretty much at the same time for independent reasons, but we stayed in touch. I joined there in 2015, so we've known each other for a while. I call him anytime I have a career question or, you know, want to talk through something. He's been unbelievably supportive and encouraging. And he has shared so much of himself with me. He's been extremely vulnerable and shared a lot about his life and what he's been through, and just, you know, his journey to where he is now, which is a self-employed and owning his own business and executive coaching and just doing things that really speak to him on a deeper level, which is like a hugely influential impact to someone like me looking at their career, trying to decide what kind of life do I want, because he really exemplifies that and embodies that thinking. And so that's really it. I mean, having someone to sort of like really listen and care about you, who's also vulnerably able to share about their life, and, you know, who's a few steps ahead of you for sure, you know, in terms of like the career ladder, the career experience that might interest you or be, you know, relevant to your world. And so you can sort of be guided in those things. Just absolutely amazing. I got extremely lucky. I'd never had anything like that before. I've never had bosses express any real interest in my career or what's going on with me, or let alone share about themselves and their vulnerabilities and their aspirations. Like, no. So that's been wonderful. And I just feel very lucky. And I think it's very hard to find that. I actually spent a period of time trying to find that. I reached out to executives back before I was at that level at a number of entertainment companies around New York. And I was like trying to do coffee lunches, and I wasn't looking for anything, just a little bit of time, just someone to talk to and to make a connection with someone above me in the industry. And it was really tough. I mean, it's tough anywhere. I think in Manhattan, it's extra tough. And I ended up having coffee with one of the HR leaders at HBO. and thought I had sort of found a mentor, and then they mysteriously disappeared from that business and I never heard from them. I don't know what happened there. So it was like really, it's tough. Like I think I also value that relationship because they are hard to come by. That is very unusual.
Yeah. Do you mentor anyone?
So I have been very lucky to have some really special direct reports that I definitely keep very close touch with. One of them who was, came on originally as an intern, at Tilting Point, Anna Maria Voitko, is a brilliant, brilliant woman and, has been just amazing to watch her grow as a person, through that time. She's now a senior leader of her own and, was able to sort of like take a sabbatical and go tour the world. And so that's been really neat. It's been wonderful to see her sort of reward herself after years of just really just learning, putting everything she had into becoming the best HR professional she could be. I hope she wouldn't mind me considering her a mentee of mine. I adore her. And I always, do my absolute best to be there for her when she needs something and to check in on her regularly. And, what's new and like, how is the career and like try and give sound advice if it's warranted. So, yeah.
So last question. A lot of our listeners are, aspiring HR professionals who are growing their careers and in various stages of their careers. What is your piece of advice that you would give to somebody listening who is interested in becoming a chief people officer or VP of people or something?
It's really simple. It's never stop learning. And this is what worked for me and what I believe has built the skills and goodie bag of information that I keep in my brain that I can draw from when I need it, because there's so many situations that you can't plan for. So the more tools you have at your disposal, the more connections you can make between all the pieces of information, the better. I was obsessed with learning about the profession and learning everything that I could about, not just HR and it's a little vacuum, but business and change management and diversity, equity, inclusion, belonging, representation, all these topics, everything that I could get my hands on and anything that I could honestly afford. I went back and got my master's, but for the 10-year span between my undergrad and master's, I never stopped going to everything I could get my hands on, reading books, just trying to never stop the momentum of bettering myself as a professional. And that's maybe a boring answer, like read a lot of books, go to seminars, go to conferences, talk to people, read tons of articles. There's so much on the internet. Some of it's bad, but you can tell what's good. A lot of it's on Harvard Business Review. Some of it's not. Some of that stuff is also bad and old fashioned, but there's so much out there. Just don't rest on your laurels. I know it takes a certain, persona, maybe personality to want to make that time. Maybe I'm just, lucky or unlucky that's the personality I have. So I never want to impose on someone else that expectation if that's just not who they are. But I put a lot of time into that. And I do credit the effort with a lot of, where I am today.
Yeah, success doesn't come without effort. And certainly, I really appreciate that, the notion to not stop learning, and particularly to learn about business, not just about don't cocoon and say, why doesn't someone listen to me? It's learn how to influence and how to really understand the business you're in. And with that, Juliet, I have really enjoyed our conversation. I wish you all the best and thank you so much for your time.
Oh, I'm so grateful to be part of this program. It's a wonderful podcast. If anyone out there is listening, go back and listen to all the other ones. They're amazing. Some amazing guests. I'm super honored. Thank you so much. This went very quickly. Actually, I had a blast.
Thank you, Juliet.
Thank you for listening. We hope you got a ton of value out of this episode. Before we go, we want to thank the sponsor of our show, the Mid-Atlantic Employers Association.
more commonly referred to as MEA. MEA provides human resources services to hundreds of businesses across numerous industries every day, bridging gaps that restrain innovation and growth.
If you need support around people issues, reach out to meainfo.org. Better people, better outcomes.